One of the basic ideas of a design, whether it's for a load-bearing beam, for example, is that it needs to be strong enough to withstand the expected stress that it's or load that it's going to see. So in mechanics or in mechanical engineering courses, we learned about the concept of calculating the effect of the load, say, on a beam to its strength, its ability to withstand that load. And there's also the related concept of safety factors and safety margin and so on. But let's explore the basic idea of the stress strength analysis in a little more detail. So the basic idea of this is that of the parts we make, of the products we make, is it going to be strong enough? Will it withstand the load? Will it survive the onslaught of the various stresses that it's going to see over it over time? Now, thinking back to the environmental conditions, it's got to take on wind loads and snow loads, for example, and the load of whatever it's supposed to hold up and carry. So it could be the weight of the roof of your garage, but it also has to withstand a number of those other things that then accumulate to create a load to it. Now, no two sets of loads are going to be exactly the same, and likewise, no two beams are going to have exactly the same strength. But the idea is that we know that every beam, for example, or flange that's holding a load will fail if you add enough of a load to it. At some point, it will yield or fracture. On the other hand, we also know that stresses that are applied will vary with different circumstances. Some years we get very little rain or snow, and other years it's a significant amount and a huge load. The variability from day to day or from year to year, or whatever your particular product's application is both of these terms are going to vary. And the trick is to make stuff that's strong enough to withstand all of the stresses and over time. And so the basic idea is that if we know what the distribution of strength is, maybe measure the load-bearing capability of this material and understand the variability of it, which would be this blue curve, and then understand the stress. Well, what kind of variation of load are we going to expect? So for, say, a solar panel, what kind of snow loads or wind loads or rain or other factors will impact the amount of weight that it'll have on the supports for our system and versus the strength of those supports? And we get this other stress curve. Now, they don't have to be normal distributions. They don't have to be similar. Some cases, we only know a single value. We know that the max expected load might be a particular value, or the minimum strength is at some value. But ideally, we know the distributions of both. And then we can do this integral. It's not the whole area that's under here. I should back this up and make it, if my curves are normal distributions, then this will be a small normal curve. And it's the probability that the strength of my individual unit is weak enough at the same time that the load is greater than that unit's strength. Let me rephrase that. It's the probability that this load is greater than the unit that it's being applied against strength. And so it's a double integral, but it's looking at the probability of pulling a random sample from the stress that happens to be high at the same time as pulling a unit that is being subjected to that stress, which is not able to withstand it. And that tells us how many are going to fail or what's the probability of failing. So that's the basic idea. Now, keep in mind that as units age, the mean strength may decline, or the spread of the strength may vary, or it may just vary out here. It may get wider just on the weak side. Those things can happen. All of those, or the stress, can shift. It can shift up or down, or it can get wider, and it could get stronger on the wider side. all four of those factors combine to give us a larger area that includes the probability of the stress being larger than the strength, which we're defining as causing a failure. The real trick is knowing what this distribution is for your stress and for your strength, and then keep them as far apart as you can. And as you, a friend of mine once said, that if we look at each of the different components and each of their failure mechanisms, we're looking for the units, if they have a stress strength curves that are separated, we're looking for the ones that overlap or are simply close, and then investigate those to see if there's drift or change with time, or if we can rectify this higher probability of having high stress on a low strength unit. It's a way of prioritizing which ones we work on. But the basic concept is that as we look at electrical circuitry or mechanical systems or enclosures or seals or pumps or pretty much anything that we're going to put a design to, is given the environmental stresses that we expect to see on the thing, and understanding the materials or the fundamental properties of strength of the unit, the component's ability to withstand that strength, that stress, we can start doing some estimates, if needed, to figure out, well, what's the probability of failure. Now, the vast majority of our components and parts will be so far above their expected stress levels that it's usually not an issue. But there's always going to be a few that are going to be pushing the edge, and identifying them earlier than later goes a long way to make our product more reliable right from the start. So one of the nice things, though, if both of those distributions are normal and we know the means and variance terms for both of those, we can use this simple formula. And it's a closed form formula, the separation of the means and a combined of the variances, and combining of the variances. And it gives us a Z value that then we can use to calculate what's the probability right off the Z tables of failures. So what we want are very high Z values. And so either the strength and stress are very far apart, and or there's a very small variations in each side. The variance terms are very small. Now keep in mind, we can add variances. This sigma squared we can add. Don't make the mistake of just adding standard deviations and skipping the square root term here. We can manipulate variances mathematically. In standard deviations, we don't. And I won't go into why that is, because right at the top of, I'm just drawing a complete blank right at the moment as why that is. But it has to do, in one analogy, is the triangle. We know that Pythagorean's theorem is, if we take x and y squared, it equals x plus y squared squared. Square root is this hypotenuse side. It's a similar concept with the variance by analogy, but it's the same basic idea, is that we can add the squared terms, but we'll get an answer if we add the standard deviation terms. It just won't be correct. All right. So let's take a quick look at a simple problem. And we have a stress distribution on a circuit, and it has, we expect it to see an 1200 watts with a standard deviation of about 20 watts. And the transformer that's in the circuit is rated at 1300 watts, but we know that from transformer to transformer, there's a 30 watt standard deviation. So what's the chance of failure? Now, if we're going to make the assumption that both of these are normal, we can use that distribution, that, or if we know that they're both normal, we can use that distribution that calculates the Z value for us. So basically, it's, what's my strength is 1300 minus my stress, which is the 1250, Is that right? Did I have 1200. So I have to update either the example or the calculation. But let's use 1250, put them a little closer together. And their standard deviation squared, square root of those, we get a value, 1.39. So then we use the Z table, and what we're looking for in the Z table, if this is 1.39, we're looking for the area to the right of that. That's the probability that we're going to have this intersection. And so we get almost 7% probability of failure given these circumstances. So even though the means are relatively close, the respective variance terms are relatively small. And so we can probably expect, if 7% is not too much, then we're good with the design. If it is too much for our circumstance, well, we either need to make a stronger transformer or do something to minimize the load that transformer will see, or minimize the variability of one or both terms. But if you have a non-normal distributions, then it's down to calculus. Let's get the distributions and sort it out from there. And you can also, if you have histograms, you could use a Monte Carlo type approach and get an estimate for what's the probability of randomly selecting a high stress at the same time as when you select a low strength. And so there's a number of different means to calculate these when they're not normal. It just happens that when they're both normally distributed, it's a pretty straightforward calculation, and we can take advantage of the standard normal tables. So one of the areas that stress strength provides is a clue as to where the likely failures are going to occur by not being strong enough for the particular load they're going to have. That's not the only kind of risk that causes failures. So, FMEA and FMECA are two tools that are similar tools that allow us to do a little bit more detailed risk analysis. Talk about that next.